Greetings, and may the peace of Christ be with you. Welcome to Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndale, and I'm privileged to be your host today. I warmly invite you to enter into another conversation in living the Catholic life. It's a journey always in our life, where we are and where we've come from, and today I have two guests in here that are going to really give us an understanding of vocation. They are the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, and I'm privileged to have Sister Joseph Andrew and Sister Mary Lawrence with us. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Deacon.
Thank you for being here. You know, it's wonderful to have you here, and you know, what I'd like to do, sisters, is really kind of give our audience an understanding of who you are and what the order is about, because I think sometimes in our Catholic life, we tend to forget that there are different orders of sisters and nuns and what particularly you represent. So, Sister Joseph, maybe you could start out and tell us who you are. And
Sure. Okay. I'm Sister Joseph Andrew, and I'm one of the founders of our community. So our community, Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, was founded 16 years ago.
Okay.
So in that amount of time, we have gone from four who founded the community to 125 now.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, and the average age of all of our community deacon is 29 years old.
29.
So we really are growing very rapidly. And I think that kind of makes sense because the church needs women religious. It needs this spiritual motherhood.
Yes.
You know, as it needs spiritual fatherhood, it needs good families. The family is more solid in when all the members are present, so to speak, and fulfilling their unique roles.
Yes.
And so as Dominican sisters, we're contemplatives first,
yes,
and then we go out and teach and preach. And
yes,
so we're scattered now throughout the United States.
Wonderful. Yeah. And you started 16 years ago.
We did. Uh-huh.
In Ann Arbor.
We started in New York under Cardinal O'Connor, actually.
Okay.
And then an opportunity came up to go to New York, which was able to assist us, you know, better, and the Cardinal also understood that. So though it was very emotional that we left New York because we loved that and we really loved Cardinal O'Connor,
yes,
we knew that God, through a lot of prayer, we knew that God was calling us to Michigan. And that's all we did know because we really didn't know people in Michigan.
But what was the draw to Michigan?
Well, the draw actually was through Mr. Tom Monahan, the owner of Domino's, who said that financially he could assist us at the very, very beginning, which is something we needed. We didn't have anything except four of us.
Of course.
So when that happened and he was willing to, there were schools there that he was willing to give to us and to assist us mainly in building what began the initial beginning of our mother house, because when we founded the community, Mother Assumpta kept saying we've got to form a mother house whereby we can bring in young vocations, you know, young women, because of course the future of the family is all about growth. So,
of course,
and it happened immediately as soon as we came to Michigan.
Yes. Wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Uh-huh. With God's providence, definitely.
And when you tell me too, the average age is 29.
Yeah.
That means God is working.
That's right.
Because really is, it's a gift from God that the young women are responding to his call.
Yes.
And Sister Mary, I'm looking at you. You know, I think I have kids older than you. I'm sure of that.
You
right
probably
now.
Do.
I'm sure I do. You know, and I'm seeing that. And you too, sister. You're young. I'm sitting here with two younger women. And by the grace of God, you've heard his call. But tell me, Sister Mary, a little bit about your journey, about how you came to be in the order.
Well, I'm Sister Mary Lawrence, and I was born and raised in Northern Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C., and I didn't grow up around a lot of religious sisters. I had the witness of many, many faithful priests, and I was raised in a wonderful parish that was Our Lady of Hope, so I feel as though Our Lady was right there with me the whole way. And
so you were a cradle Catholic?
I was a cradle Catholic,
okay.
Praise God.
Okay.
Youngest of four, my family, we went to Mass every Sunday,
okay,
and we were faithful Catholics, praise God. And so I was born and raised in that environment, and I was an active member in my parish youth group. I was actually a leader, and I was on a youth retreat when I was a junior in high school, and I was in adoration for the first time in my life. And I just knew that I was being called to become a religious sister. And I knew that had to be from God because it had never really occurred to me.
The Spirit was working.
The Spirit was definitely working. And I was praying there and I just thought, oh my goodness, this is definitely of God. And I wasn't able to really respond at that time to the call. I had to pray more about it and grow in my faith and mature more. And so during that time I graduated from high school, I went to public school, actually, okay. all the way through. And then I went on to study English and secondary education at James Madison University in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And during that first year, I was just really dissatisfied with the college life that I was experiencing, and there wasn't a strong Catholic campus ministry, right. which is something that was essential to me because I'd grown up in such a strong parish community. And so I just really began searching because it just, everything was very empty to me. And I thought to myself, okay, I am really pretty miserable right now, and I want to be happy, and I know that God wants me to be happy. And so if possibly discerning a religious vocation will bring me joy, I'm going to look into it.
Let me interject something. Mm-hmm. I just want to ask this question. On that journey, how had you discussed this with your parents, and how supportive were they of this? I know sometimes that's an issue.
Oh, it is. Mm-hmm. Yes. Many times. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
No, that's an excellent question. Every family is different. My parents didn't actually know that I was discerning a religious vocation until I was sure that I really had a religious vocation, because even though my parents were faithful Catholics, I knew it was going to be something new to them because no one in our family had ever discerned a religious vocation. We didn't have any priests or religious in the family.
And sometimes there's this perception or attitude, geez, I want nuns and priests, but let it be somebody else's child.
It's true. Mm-hmm. So when I told them, my mother was just ecstatic, absolutely ecstatic. She had been taught by sisters her whole life, and so she just couldn't have been more joyful. She said that I was the reason why she got married, was that she could bring a religious to the church. I was meant to be that gift. So she was just over the moon.
How wonderful.
It was really a blessing. My dad is I've always been his little girl, and so he had to really kind of adjust a little more through prayer, but he's so supportive. He loves visiting the sisters, and he feels as though he's gained all of these daughters now.
Now, that had to give you some real confidence in your decision-making process, too, that God was giving you some type of sign that your parents were also encouraging this.
I was very blessed in that way. Not everyone can say that, but I was very blessed that my parents really stood by me. And that was young. I was 20 when I entered. And so that in itself, knowing that I was going to be not finishing college, was definitely a leap of faith for them more than it was for me, because they always think, oh, you're going to finish college, you're going to have your whole set career, and then maybe you can discern God's will. So doing that was a leap of faith for them, but they supported me.
But all our sisters do get college degrees,
yes.
So they knew, too, that she would finish.
Exactly.
Now, had you finished now?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I'm certified for elementary education,
okay,
English
wonderful.
Language arts.
Because one of your, what do I want to use, is significance of the Dominicans is the education.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So all of our sisters have to get an education degree or certification, and then probably all of them, basically, but at least certainly most of them will go on to get postgraduate degrees
wonderful.
As well.
Wonderful,
definitely.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, Sister Joseph.
Yes.
We heard Sister Mary's journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's important that the audience hear our journeys, because in the journey is the struggle.
That's true.
And then comes the understanding of living for God. How was it for you that you came into this order?
Well, I actually entered the convent at 17 years old.
Oh,
so I was right out of high school. And, again, a very Catholic family. My father's 100% Polish, and he supported it. But again, I was daddy's little girl, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then mom is a convert from the Baptist religion.
Oh, boy.
As you can tell, I have a southern accent, so this is down in East Tennessee, Smoky Mountain area. So she had a much harder time. But part of the reason that she did was because I have one older sister, a younger brother as well. But my older sister had entered the convent 2 years before me.
Let me ask you a question first.
Yeah.
Were your parents married while she was a Baptist and he was a Catholic?
No. My father said, either you become Catholic or this relationship is not going anywhere. So she asked on their first date, because that was when he presented this to her, what is Catholic? She hadn't heard the term. And so they left the dinner, and he went and introduced her to a Catholic priest.
Oh my gosh.
And then 3 months later, she was Catholic, and they got married. So
wonderful.
Yeah, it's really kind of a unique story, especially knowing, you know, the good Baptists in the South, they don't convert
that's
quickly.
Hard.
So mom had a very special grace. There's
doubt. That's really an unconditional love for your dad, that she would do that, because she loved him enough.
Yes, definitely. And trusted him. And yeah, both my parents are incredibly good Catholics. So because of that, really, and I was taught by sisters, which is something that's much more rare. As Sister Mary Lawrence was saying, much more rare in today's world, as Sister Lawrence was saying. She never even saw sisters until she came to make a retreat and saw me.
Yes.
I mean, that was it. She had already determined she believed she had a religious vocation by God's design, but didn't even know what a sister basically was. So,
and could it be she's seen it, but they didn't have habits on? I mean, they're in today's world,
anything's possible.
Yeah. You never know.
Yeah. I'm sure that's probably true, too, in the D.C. area. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
That's true. But I was raised by sisters, and in fact, by the Dominican community that I did enter at that time. And so for me, it was this beautiful family life and this beautiful, you know, consecration through the sacrament of marriage. Was that what God was calling me to? Or the sisters? And as I said, my mom in particular would have loved to have had grandchildren. And so in 2 years, both daughters entered the convent. So she really is my hero in so many ways, as is my father. My parents, I do believe, are saints. They're both, I think, in heaven today. So in any case, that kind of rich foundation made it, I would say, not even easy, but a responsibility, which vocation I was called to.
Yes.
It wasn't you take your guesses. You are called, young lady, to something, a particular way of love. And that was very important in my family. So my parents did, even though Mom had a lot of tears, but I remember the Mother Superior saying, you know, she has a right to her tears. And that gave me such peace. And now as vocation director, when I hear these stories, I'm like, oh, you're on solid ground, honey. Don't worry about it.
That's
you
right.
know, God will give the grace, and these tears just will be always a memory to you of how much you are loved, you know, and that they do want you to do God's will.
You know, and what you said that too, is that she has the right to those tears.
Yes.
It really is an understanding of it's a transition for them also.
Yes,
and
very much
they have to come to that understanding and to acceptance of that. And it doesn't mean they're tears of sorrow.
Exactly.
Tears of change.
And it's hard for
all of us.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And so actually I think that's kind of healthy, you know, because I said, well, you're loved.
Yes.
Therefore, you're going to understand to espouse God, whom you can't see and feel and touch. And, you know,
yes.
So your understanding of the religious consecration is going to be that much stronger because you have experience human love. And I think that's very important before a girl enters,
yes.
you know, that.
Yes.
And there are, as you said, Deacon, they come from every kind of family situation. So I entered the convent right out of high school, and my sister was a novice at that time, and she made her profession, and I entered as a postulant, and we were in the novitiate together for 1 year, which is very unusual. And then through time and loving that community and being part of that community and being a novice mistress in that community as well, four of us from that community began to realize through time and a lot of prayer that God wanted us to found a new community. And in the Dominican order, this is the way that women's communities do spread.
Yes.
Different orders do it in different ways. But the Dominican tradition is from one community that a certain number of sisters will begin another community. And so all of us can trace our roots back, so to speak, in the Dominican order. And so this is how these different communities of Dominicans spring up. And the other thing that's very important is each one is autonomous. Obviously, they're under the Holy Father. They're
right.
under the Master General, et cetera. But they're all autonomous. And so there can be a variety in the way we live our Dominican charism in these different communities.
How many different Dominicans would there be?
Each community is its own self,
okay.
and Dominicans are throughout the world.
Right.
And again,
so it's hard to say.
Yeah, it's very hard to say. I'd say lots,
yeah.
many, many, many. So our charism by Father Dominic, a whole lot.
Yeah.
So our charism by Dominic is first of all to be contemplative.
Yes.
So every day, our community as Dominican Sisters of Mary Mother of the Eucharist, we begin with a Eucharistic Adoration Hour. And so that's very essential to us. And I think that really sets us aside from many, many other Dominican communities that certainly have a great deal of prayer, but maybe not Eucharistic adoration. But we said that's very important for our community.
Yeah.
And so we have that daily, as well as all the other, the Divine Office 4 times a day and everything else that's, you know. So a great deal of prayer. But from that, in the Dominican tradition, we always say that the fountain it fills up inside ourselves through prayer. And then it gets with such pressure that we have to run out and spill that out, so to speak, on the world.
Beautiful.
And then when you've done that, you're exhausted, and then you come back home, and you're before
refresh.
The Blessed Sacrament again for more.
Yes,
exactly. Uh-huh.
Well, now, are you living with 120 of you at where you're at? Are you all in the same facility?
No, not actually, because okay. our sisters now, after the, there's an 8-year formation, initial okay. formation period, your own formation the rest of your life. There's an 8-year initial formation period. And then in that, they study the life, they make their vows, and then by 8 years, they usually make their final vows. Mm-hmm. There can be exceptions if need be, but most will make their final vows by that time. They've also received their education degree, such as what Sister Mary Lawrence has received, too. Then they are usually sent out on one of our, we call them missions, which okay. are places where convents in various places. Okay. So now our sisters teach K through 12 in a variety in 8 different states, variety of Catholic schools.
Yeah, wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, I hear this story. Sister Mary, and we'll get into more of this too about vocations, but what it is, I mean, after my question should say, is what do you think it is that holds some young ladies back from hearing the call?
Well, I think the world today is just so full of noise. It's so full of busyness, and we fill our lives with more and more noise and busyness. You're in the car. You have the radio on. Mm-hmm. You're waiting at the doctor's for your doctor's appointment. What are you doing? You're texting. You're always just plugged into something,
right.
and you're not necessarily making time to be plugged into God, so to speak, to
yeah.
really have that silence, to have that peace, to let Him speak to you in your heart. Even if people are very devout young Catholics, they're still very involved in all sorts of, whether it be sports, they have their jobs, they have their whatever, and they're not necessarily taking little chunks of time to make sure that they are spending that time in prayer, that time with God. If the more we are plugged into everything else and tuned into everything else, the less we really are making time for just that silence, which
yeah.
is so essential to really hear God and to hear His whispering. That's how I heard Him, was in adoration, in
exactly.
that silence.
You know, I do counsel some people, and many times I'll say to them, you need to sit at the feet of the Master. At some time in the day, you've just got to take that time to be with Christ and to sit at His feet, because if we don't take that time, we never can hear that gentle voice calling us into that mm-hmm. reality. And
absolutely.
It may not be a religious vocation. It may be something
mm-hmm.
else. But
yes.
We have a hard time discerning in this country because
it's
of
true.
The fact that we are a noisy country.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I was going to say, I would like to add one other thing to that. Certainly, the prayer is the basis of all, because if you're hearing your own voice, good luck.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I mean, that's about as ridiculous as it gets, you know, and you're basing your life on your own little guesses. You know, good luck. But once you do hear it, I think the other thing, Deacon, and this is what it's very, very important, and this is where we really need good priests and good deacons and good laity to spur these young people on to go and find out.
Yes.
Because they can sit there forever thinking it, and through various, you know, motivations, be too fearful.
Exactly.
Not to go find out. And we know people that do this, too, and they spin their wheels in a lot of things. And as Sister began telling her story, they never really find that happiness, because fear keeps them from just biting the bullet and saying, okay, God, be it done to me according to your will.
That's
you
right.
obviously made me. You know the plan. Just let me know.
Yeah, that fiat.
Exactly. But to do that, the world doesn't help a great deal. So they have to do what Christ said to Andrew and John, you know, come away and come with me and listen, and I will let you know. So they have to go on some kind of a retreat or do something and begin to actually plug into a religious community that's going to help them discern,
yes.
because they really don't know what they're looking for. They
right.
just know through what I would call a holy suffering, that there's an emptiness inside that is yearning to be filled.
Yeah. You know, I also have heard, too, and I've done it before, is, you know, we all have good friends, and we know friends of ours that are prayerful.
Yes.
And I think it's important also that a person discerning go to the people they trust.
Definitely.
And know that are prayer warriors.
Definitely.
And ask them to really take it to prayer for yourself.
Yes.
That they would pray for you in a discernment process, because many times they can reinforce what we're trying to decide.
Definitely.
Because God will speak to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important for
and
all of us.
And even in asking others and coming, so to speak, you're claiming your own openness to this vocation,
yes.
and that's important. And then when they see this reflected in another person that they trust, like, yes, I could possibly see this in you, that really helps, because they're just not going to go out and tell the world at large and get much of a positive response,
yeah.
you know? So I think that's very important, and that is where, you know, people that come from Catholic groups, you know, whatever they may be, that really are prayerful, they will help support. And that is such a gift to a young woman or a young man discerning.
Well, you know, sometimes in this world, too, we paint a picture of what a sister or a nun should look like. And sometimes the concept is they're going to be older and they're going to not be in tune to the world and, and all these different things. But, you know, the reality is here I am sitting in front of two lively, vital women who really have a love for the Lord. And let me ask you this question so you can answer this better than I. You know, there's this understanding that, oh, you're going to lose, you're not going to have fun, there's going to be this constant rigidity in your life, and all this praying and everything else, is this going to be such a hard thing to do? What is it like living in love, the life, Sister Mary?
Pure joy. It's just pure, pure joy. Because when you're so connected to Jesus, and when you have that Eucharistic adoration daily, Mass daily, the prayers, it just, that closeness to God is going to overflow in that joy. If here you are with, in our case, 120 other sisters, just striving for holiness, striving to become saints, to grow in the virtues. And so they're just, there's this beautiful community.
Yes.
And you really feel like you're part of a large family, a family just full of love, full of joy, just striving to become saints. And to have fun along the way. We celebrate liturgically, so if there's a big feast day, for our feast days, we celebrate them. And it just, it's so much more fun because you are connected to each other in a spiritual way, and then also in a very much so a community, and that fraternal life. It just, it's so much fun. You get to know each other in a way that you wouldn't even get to know maybe members of your family.
Exactly.
Because you're there together, you're praying together, you're struggling through things together. It's just, it's beautiful.
Sister Joseph, I know you're living a vocational life. Do you ever miss the secular life?
Not one speck. Are you kidding me? What does it have that I don't have? You know what it does, though, I would have to say, and again, it's that Dominican spirit that you want to get out there and you want to bring what you have received so beautifully to everyone.
Yes.
And so there is that holy fire, as Gavin and Sienna would say, you know, if we are what we're supposed to be, we'll set the whole world on fire.
Yeah.
You have that fire that's constantly kind of consuming internally. And so you love to get out, you know, when you're sent by obedience and to go give that, because really I travel a lot in my role as vocation director.
Yeah.
And I never experience a negative response. And people will say, oh, my gosh, do people stare at you? Well, if they do, I'm right up in their face saying, hey, let's talk, you know.
Right.
To me, that's an invitation. And they come up with all their Catholics and non-Catholics alike.
Yeah.
Because I think this habit is a sign of hope in a world that so many people walk around knowing that they should have a relationship with God, but not knowing how to get it, being fearful of it, not wanting to talk about it. And since we proclaim Him so radically and in your face, so to speak, by the habits and by the smile and by the whole composure of, you know, come talk to me if you really want to. We never have a quiet moment on a plane or in an airport or whatever. And it's so exciting to be there for everyone because we're spiritual moms to every single person.
You know, sister, you hit on a word that is difficult for this society to understand, and that was obedience. When you said that, I thought, you know, that's probably one of the hardest things for the secularized society to understand is obedience to the truth. And to really come into that understanding. You know, when you live in this obedience to God's call, it's joyful.
Oh, it is.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Because you're always doing what He wants you to do, which means you're always getting the graces that you're supposed to be getting. And with that comes the peace. And I think if there's one thing the world is missing radically, it's that interior peace.
Yes, absolutely.
Just to be able to be happy with yourself because you can believe in yourself because you're following the designer's plan.
Exactly.
You know, you're not going against Him constantly and trying
And so many of our people today are really chasing after that almighty dollar and that dream that they feel are going to find fulfillment and fulfillment in some career or more education for education's sake and never get into the real understanding of living for the Lord.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a powerful thing. So, here you are in Grand Rapids.
Yes.
Here
and, we are.
You know, we want to talk a little bit about that, too, because you're on, you have a mission here. Mm-hmm. And exactly, why are you here in Grand Rapids this time?
We are here this time because, well, first of all, a wonderful woman has invited us, as well as several wonderful priests and lay people, too. And so you put it all together and you say, okay, God, there must be some reason that you really want us to go to Grand Rapids. And this wonderful woman is Karen Weber, and she's the mother of one of our novices, Sister Peter
Grace.
I know. So Sister Peter Grace is just wonderful, and we got her basically through Notre Dame University, where a number of young women are entering our community. That's a great place, as well as many other colleges and universities. But what I'm saying is we knew that God wanted us to come here. So in coming here, we have been so blessed. We wanted to go to as many schools as we possibly could.
Yes.
We went to Aquinas College also. Mm-hmm. We went to some grade schools. We're going to be going to some high schools tomorrow and other parishes. And just what we find, Deacon, is that everybody wants a little bit of sister, and sister is so rare.
Yeah.
And it just pricks your heart. What can we do? And our community is very much like this, being founded on the cusp of the new evangelization. Where can we go to do the most we can for as many people?
Exactly.
Because, again, you spur them on to want to love God more and live their faith that much more. And
yes.
And so we can't, you know, we're sending our sisters out as rapidly as we can. Right now we're from California to Phoenix to Texas to California.
All over.
To Rome.
Ohio.
Wow.
Yeah, Rome, Michigan, obviously, Indiana. Where am I leaving out? Anyway, and so we just keep spreading them out as fast as they are, you know, ready to be able to
right.
do that. But then we have Mother Assumpta now has like over 350 invitations to various schools
oh.
all over. And you see these in our maternal heart just bleeds, so to speak, saying, how can we? But you can only do what you can do, and that's the reality of this limited existence down here.
You know, I have to ask this question
yeah.
because most of our young kids today in our Catholic schools aren't used to seeing sisters
yeah.
in habits.
Right, right.
So that's got to be a kind of, I won't say a treat for them, but they probably have a million questions to ask
oh,
when
they
see
do.
Them.
Oh, they do.
Yes.
And what is so precious is like even, well, wherever we go, but I can give this example certainly here in Grand Rapids. So we were at a school yesterday, and so we were able to, it was Immaculate Heart of Mary, and so we were able to stay have two assemblies. So was it K through four, and then 5th through 8th. So the little ones, when it was time for them to leave, so that the bigger ones could come in, and of course the teachers are trying to organize. And being teachers, we totally understand this. So we were kind of standing over there trying not to distract because we had already distracted them totally. Well, then the teacher's like, okay, get in line. Well, then they were looking at us and trying to look at, you know, who's in front of them. And then they just broke a line. They came running over, and here comes everybody to hug sister. The teacher's trying to get them out, and they're just going, okay. And then they're hugging. And then they just have this natural affinity. You know,
and
it's beautiful.
And they know that you are set apart.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
They see that
mm-hmm.
because they see in you what we're professed to be as Catholics.
Yes.
And the profound Catholicity that you
yes.
bring to them.
Thank you. That's beautiful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I praise you to God.
And people say, aren't they afraid of the habits? This is like wearing the greatest sign of come hug me or come talk to me. Or we can't hide, so to speak, no matter what we do, no matter how tired we are. Everybody comes up because that's mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that spiritual mom. And mom is always ready for you.
How many times in wearing that habit you might be on a plane or a train and pretty soon the person sitting next to you starts to squirm a little bit.
That happens, too.
That does happen.
And many times they'll start a conversation, or
mm-hmm.
we will,
yeah.
and in no time the little barrier is broken down because you sense it. And you go, well, tell me all about you. And pretty soon they feel a comfort that, well, I can confide this to you. This is what happened. This is why I am. Do
yeah.
you have any thoughts, you know, and you just try to help them because
exactly.
it's a suffering world,
exactly.
you know, and they don't
Sister
know
Mary,
what to do.
Sister Mary, you've experienced that with the kids coming up to hug you too, right?
Absolutely. I just love it. They'll just come running up, and I did some teaching in kindergarten, and they just always wanted to be at my feet. They just, if anytime I was reading, I'd have to say, okay, you need to sit. You need to give sister this little square to sit here, because otherwise they'd be just wanting to crawl over my knees, all over my rosary. I had one little boy who would just, he would be sucking on his thumb in one hand, and then he'd have part of my rosary beads in his other hand. Oh, my goodness. Just total spiritual motherhood. I love it. Just at their feet, just as if we're all at the feet of Mary all the time.
It's, exactly.
It's as if they sense that we belong to them, that we in some way remind them of Our Lady, even if it's not consciously, it's subconsciously.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe a sister could address this, too, because all our sisters get their teaching degrees through Eastern Michigan University, mm-hmm. so they student teach in public schools.
Wonderful.
So you have this habit in public schools.
Whoa.
All over the
world.
All over Ann Arbor. So sister had that experience as well.
I was actually student teaching at Wines Elementary, which is a school in Ann Arbor that none of the sisters had ever been to before. And so Sister Maria Miguel and I, we were both in kindergarten, student teaching at a place where they just didn't even know that we existed, even though we were only 15 minutes away. And it was amazing to see over time just how, as you said, parents who weren't really sure, that we had very receptive parents, but they didn't know how to kind of interact with us. Mm-hmm. They didn't know if we were normal, so to speak.
Right.
And they just, I saw a transformation within the parents. Oh, the end of my student teaching experience, they all were coming up and thanking me, and let me just tell you about how much Miles adores you, and I just want to thank you for all you've done for him, and just all of that. And the students, they would start saying, you know, I go to church. Do you go to church? They would just start asking me about Jesus and who's on your cross. Yeah. What is that? What? How did he die? He died. And so even though we didn't necessarily go in there to teach religion, obviously,
right.
It's amazing how much God came up through them and through their purity and just their way of seeing things. They would come up to us and they would want to start asking, why do you always wear that? What does this mean? It was beautiful.
But that is part of the witness that you brought to that school, because here's an understanding that we think everybody should be secularized, and yet you have the courage, and I say the courage, to accept that challenge, to go in there and to be
it's
Christ.
It's exciting. It's fun.
Yes.
It's but, you know, it's not just the children either, because I was thinking, you know, having all of our sisters go through a secular university that's very large and, you know, everything. Another beautiful aspect is the effect on the teachers. So I'll give this kind of quickly, and this happened a few years ago, but I remember it, that there was a class that all the sisters had to take because it was a teaching class, you know, necessary for education degree. And so the day number one, there were about two sisters that were in there, so the teacher comes in, and unknown to anyone, she was a ex-Catholic, or she had left the Catholic faith, so she's looking at the sisters, she gets nervous. She said, oh, no, I'm going to have to teach in this class, you know. Well, then the door opens again, and more students come in, including some more sisters. Well, she's just getting more and more nervous, and then as she decided that she had to go and tell the department head. She just really didn't want to teach this class because this was just bothering her. So she's going down the hall when she's passing more sisters going into her classroom. I think there were eight sisters in this particular class this particular semester. So she goes, and of course she didn't receive permission. They're like, you know, you're being paid to teach this class. You must teach this class. And she goes back in there where all the sisters are kind of whispering to each other on day number one. Oh, she looks nervous. Oh, poor thing. You know, let's just go tell her what a good job she's doing after class, you know. So they all come up to her after class,
my.
Which makes her that much more nervous, et cetera. Anyway, they make it through the semester. And towards the end, they invite her to come to Vespers on Sunday, because our Vespers on Sunday is always open to the public. So it's 5:00 Vespers. Rosary. And so she decides at that point that she will come with her two daughters and her husband, and they all came back into the Catholic faith.
Praise be to God.
Isn't it?
Praise be to God.
Yeah, and that's just one story. There's so many stories.
And that goes back to the authority that you presented and the obedience that you brought to
that's
it.
That's right. Yeah.
It really
yeah.
does, because yeah. she saw that in both of you. She saw that in the sisters, that
uh-huh.
they were obedient, and obviously the nervousness was because of the authority you bring.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's always a threat.
Uh-huh.
That's always a threat. So now I have to plug a little bit, because you were at one of my parish this week, too, also at St. Thomas
we
the Apostle
were,
Parish.
Yes.
And we have a very vibrant school there.
Oh, my gosh. We got to go and meet,
goodness.
I think, every single student. And the principal is outstanding.
Susie. She's wonderful.
Yes.
She is wonderful. And the children are wonderful. And we have just been spoiled. I mean, these little children are just, they're just full of love.
Yeah, they are.
You know,
and I've said this before, but we have many parishioners in our parish that are willing to make the sacrifice
yes.
for a Catholic education.
Yes.
And I just pray that by the grace of God,
those parents who are struggling with their children in public schools might see that there is a sacrifice to be made to send them to a Catholic school.
Yes.
But the advantages and the graces that come from it are amazing. Goodness.
What would you rather sacrifice for than your own flesh and blood?
That's right.
I mean, how could you really, I can remember many times growing up, and my father was a big scientist in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and he was offered so many advances. And he and mom would talk about it, and they'd always say, we will not pull our children out of this Catholic school. And they have the sisters, and they have the authentic faith taught. Yes. And he said, you know, in our parish, there's something to the solidity, if you can make it happen, of giving your children, you know, the truth.
Mm-hmm.
With freedom, yeah. You know, and what was the freedom? We weren't little saints by any means, and we got corrected, et cetera. But, you know, through that, you begin to learn what you really value and what you don't.
Yes.
And I think that's just so important. There is no telling it. There's no point in me even going there, what I could be today if it wasn't for my parents and my Catholic education and all the sacrifices that my parents went through, and they did, especially to send us 50 minutes away to a Catholic high school. Every single day on a Greyhound bus, believe it or not. I mean, the whole thing, there wasn't anything appealing except the product, that it was a Catholic high school, and it had the Blessed Sacrament in that school building.
That's wonderful.
And for all the sacrifices that my parents did have to make for that part, more than even for the elementary school, look how God reaps the benefits.
That's
for
right.
them. And they're in heaven today, and he's thanking them for it. And you only do it once, you know.
That's
you
right.
only have these children entrusted to you for this part of life.
That's
and
so
then in the big scheme, you better do well for those children. You know?
I also think of this, too. There is a real comfort and a blessing to parents when you send them to a Catholic education.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, you know of the consistency.
Yeah.
The truth is going to be presented.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not knocking the public schools, but I'm just saying that you're getting a variety of different thoughts and teachings.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
you never have that consistency yet. I'm not asking the school to do my job in the Catholic
school. Exactly.
But I'm asking to reinforce what I believe.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, again, as teachers in Catholic schools, we're all about what these are doing for young people, because we see it on that one-on-one, and we also see, as you brought up, Deacon, the effects on the family.
Yes.
How many families have been brought back to the faith because, for whatever reason, they decided to send their children to this Catholic school? When we first were founded 16 years ago and went to Ann Arbor and began teaching, within a week, the parents were coming to the sisters saying, our children know more about the Catholic faith than we do.
Oh, yes.
And we began adult education because they wanted it, they needed it, and they were more sponges than the children were, who, you know, you have to create a Catholic culture if you love your faith and you believe in your faith.
Yes, you do.
And it should be at the point of sacrifice, or else it's not real. I mean, anything good in this life, you're not going to get the glory if you don't go through the suffering.
Amen.
And so everybody wants the joy, and they want to remain at that level, but that's very superficial if you don't go deeper.
Yeah.
And so that's the greatness of being called to sanctity, that by the end of life, you have given every speck.
Yeah. You know,
you shouldn't hold anything back for yourself.
I do believe there's been a change in our Catholic education, just since I went through Catholic grade school and high school, is that we're putting more effort now in religious training, in teaching our faith. To be quite honest with you, I'm not saying where I went, but we really never opened a Bible.
Yeah.
And
today
we're having a different concept in our Catholic understanding that we need to get back to the Word. We need to make more effort into really preach Christ crucified
in
this understanding.
Mm-hmm.
That was not only the issues in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And we suffered a little bit.
There was
a
lot of suffering in that time.
Yes.
And I think that's when homeschooling even became such a big thing for parents that really were concerned about. But I will still have to kind of say, and I have many homeschooling families that are good friends of mine, and that's a preservation in some places. But where you can plug into a good, solid Catholic school, you've got the best.
Yep. Amen.
Because then they go home to mom and dad who support this and bring it even to a deeper influence. But there's no way that they can necessarily have the richness of the Catholic culture in an environment that's not home. They need to learn, when I step out of home, the world also can have this strong Catholic Christian culture. And they found that difficult to make that adjustment many times but the school is like, of course you can. I go to school and I see it, you know? And they subconsciously, I think, learn the Catholic culture is to permeate the entire world, not just their little home, so to speak.
And we have many students in my parish, you know, that their parents aren't Catholic. They come from different backgrounds because they see the value in the Catholic education.
Yes.
But it also is important in that Catholic education because it can foster vocations, because they begin to see living that beautiful
Catholic
life.
You said it. It's so true.
Yes.
It's so true.
And it has to be witnessed to.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so when we're witnessing to them, is whether it be a priest, a deacon, a sister, and whatever it is, they need to see that life.
They do.
Yeah.
And they need to know we're real flesh and blood.
Yes.
And
that we laugh
and we cry.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And we have a sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
And all these other things that we're called to be as human.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
May I also mention something about our vocation discernment retreat?
Please.
So when we began our community, we were so conscious that retreats can be offered by religious communities, kind of a come and see them, you know, that particular community. And that's important, and that's fine, that's good. But we wanted to begin these vocation discernment retreats whereby young women would be, juniors in high school to about mid-30s approximately. Okay. But anyway, where they can come apart from their normal life, so to speak, to this incredible environment. And they're 24 hours, but it's all-night Eucharistic adoration. They sleep on the floor in our school because we don't have enough room in the mother house for the sisters, let alone visitors. But we began, the very first one was like 13 young women came. Now this last one, and we max out at 180, and they literally, we have 180 at every single retreat.
Oh my goodness.
Registration has to stop a couple months in advance of this, and they have come from as far as Europe and Australia for a 24-hour retreat. And when I say, why do you come? They say, because we hear these really work. And they do, because we teach them how to go before Christ and to be quiet, which is hard for a young woman or an older woman or any woman. To really, really listen to God. And so these are, come listen to God tell you his plan for you.
Yeah.
And so thereby they discern marriage, and they don't say, well, I got married because everybody else is getting married. I got married because I discern this is my vocation. Mm-hmm. Or religious life, or whatever is their calling. And so these things are so popular. As I said, I think if we offered them even more than three times a year, we would still pack them with 180, but that's as much as we really have time to be able to do.
Exactly.
But they're just amazing how young people today are on fire wanting the truth.
Yeah.
And I do think that's partly because they have seen, they can look at the world and say, I don't want some of that. I don't want to go that route. You know, why can't I find out early? And the other thing is so beautiful, and as you mentioned, the Catholic schools and the even the really solid CCD programs or the Catholic groups in colleges and universities,
mm-hmm.
these things are alive, and they're alive with the youthfulness of the church today. And as John Paul said, Pope John Paul the Great said to young people, you're not the future of the church, you're the present.
Right.
And that's like an empowerment that I've got to be the person God created me to be.
Right.
And there's such a desire. They're not afraid of sacrifice.
No.
In fact, if we mitigated the sacrifice of our life, we wouldn't begin to get 20 plus vocations every year.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, and I would say we don't really deserve them, you know, so... But it's because it's the real thing, and they are so good by God's design, and the laity that has stepped forward and played their role so strongly. These, you know, the church is in many ways very strong today.
Yes, it is.
And in other ways, it's suffering a great deal. But again, those sorrowful mysteries are very real, and they're going to be necessary. They are necessary. So,
Sister Mary, did you happen to go on a retreat, or do you help lead retreats?
I actually did attend three retreats before I entered.
Okay.
We have them throughout the year. The first one I went on was in May. We now have moved it to April. We have one coming up April 26th, 27th. But I went on one in May, and I knew from the start, that was the first time I met sisters. The first sister I met was Sister Joseph Andrew. She gave me a large hug, and I just was swept away by love the entire weekend. It was wonderful. And then I attended two more just because I wanted to be with the sisters.
Yes.
We had another one in November and another one in February, and I attended both of them just because I wanted to be near them. I wanted to get a glimpse of what my life was going to be like.
Were you trying at that time to confirm your calling? Or
I was sure from the first retreat. Okay. I knew this is where I wanted to be. There was no question in my mind. But I knew that that was not God's timing that I entered that exact year. I knew I needed to wait one more year and mature and grow in my own faith and give my family more time to mature and grow in the idea of my religious vocation as well. And so I just continued to attend retreats so I could continue to see Sister Joseph Andrew and all the other sisters, and also meet all of the other young women who come, because, as Sister said, we get 180 women from all over the country, Canada, even throughout the world. And so just to be able to form a community within them was just amazing as well. And now we do help, because I am at the Mother House. I do help to put on the retreats, and I get to carpool with all the, bringing the girls back and forth who are going to the airports and preparing their meals and just their talks, because we give them spiritual conferences and everything. So it's a wonderful blessing.
Oh, that is wonderful. Hey, and I know you don't keep statistics on this or records, but you're talking about 180 retreatants.
Yeah.
How many are actually seeking a vocation, a religious vocation? Do you know?
Do you know, everyone that's there is open, and that's what's important.
Okay.
The vast majority believe it's marriage, but some of them are brought there by their boyfriends. Like, you give God first dibs.
Yeah.
And I could tell so many stories. One young woman went out to the car, and she said, you know, we've discerned, Sister and I have discerned my vocation, and so her boyfriend was there, and he said, okay, what is it? And she was like in her late 20s, and he said, what is it? And she said, it's to marriage. And she had thought that he was the one, but he's the one that made her make this retreat. Because he said, I am not going to steal someone away from God. You make this retreat, and you be open. And it was pretty obvious that she has a married vocation. And so when she went out and said this to him, he said, well, then will you marry me? And he pulled out the ring, and she goes, wait a minute, will you say that again? They ran inside the school and right before the Blessed Sacrament, the tabernacle, and he proposed to her, and she went running out screaming, I'm engaged. I mean, these retreats really work. Now they have four children, and one of them is Joseph Andrew.
But you know, here's a beautiful understanding of really living in obedience to God's will.
Yes.
And two people who will do it in harmony.
Yes.
What a wonderful, how blessed is that marriage?
Absolutely. It's so true. And that's what you say. You just want the solidity to know you're doing God's will.
Yeah.
And when the world attacks and the evil one attacks and all these things, that you keep your focus on the good, the true, the beautiful, and you say, before God, this is his plan, and I will be faithful.
Yes.
And there's just so much assurance, and therefore so much more freedom and joy. It spills forth when we're not encaged in our own
And you know what else it does? It relieves the burden.
Yes.
Of trying to create your own happiness in your own life.
Yeah.
Because it's in God's hands.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Uh-huh.
And then you live this joyful existence, because every day you wake up and say, okay, God, I'm putting it in your hands.
Exactly.
Do with me as you will.
Yes. Mary's fiat. You know, how beautiful is that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we look, of course, you know, here we are just 2 days away from the December 8th on the Immaculate Conception there. So it's a beautiful understanding.
Uh-huh.
So we've got a little bit of time left. What's the rest of your agenda for this week now?
Well, actually, tomorrow we'll be going to one of the high schools.
Okay.
And then at that point, we really do need to head home, because there's a lot at home waiting for us. Our sisters will be soon coming in from all the various missions throughout the United States for Christmas and all that. So there's a lot to be done at home. But then also tonight we'll be speaking at St. Isidore's.
On
discernment of vocations and whatever that they, you know, where their questions will lead us and, you know, all that kind of thing. Because, you know, it's really an interesting thing. We could, I realize this because I do a lot of speaking, because there's a lot of engagements for the community, and that's part of my role. But I'll say, okay, would you let me to speak on Mary or the Eucharist? Those are two good ones. And I'll go through a variety of things, or just discerning religious vocations and religious life in the world today. It's always that.
Yes.
Because that's what people just don't know unless they're somehow involved or plugged into a really, you know, dynamic religious community that's growing.
Exactly.
You know,
and people need to be taught.
And people need that. They want to know.
They do. They do. Absolutely.
And there are vocations. We are seeing this. There's vocations everywhere. And what will these young women or young men for the priesthood, what will they do if someone's not there? It was interesting, because even on this trip, we met this beautiful, beautiful family. And so I said to one of the sons, have you ever thought of becoming a priest? And he just kind of looked at me, and he was just silenced. And his mother said, congratulations, you actually silenced him. And his eyes were just huge. And then his mother said, has anybody ever asked you that? You know, and he said, no. So then later on, he came back and he goes, will you pray for me if I'm called to be a priest, that I will do it?
Wonderful.
I know. And I'm like, you know, people just need that freedom to be able to, you know, and I always say so many priests became priests because sisters taught them, mm-hmm. you know, in the days when sisters were all over teaching in Catholic
yes,
schools,
yes.
you know, and would say to the little guys, you know, have you ever thought of being a priest? Or today, have you ever thought of being a deacon? Or,
yeah.
you know, what is God calling you to? And they're very open to grace.
Yes, they are.
And that baptismal grace
but
is already
working.
But they
need to be working. Encouraged.
Yeah, yeah. And to have somebody that they trust say, I could see that in you if that's yeah. God's plan. Well, then it opens up the freedom to be able to think.
Yeah.
And
that's what we need to do because we need to be formed in the Lord.
Exactly.
And that's mm-hmm. what you're doing. You're actually helping forming them in the Lord that they can make that understanding of who they're answering to,
uh-huh.
the call that they're having, mm-hmm. who's the call from.
Oh, another thing, Deacon, if I could say this too. So once a year we have these moms retreats, and so they are open to whoever. So the moms retreat is always the first weekend in December. And so registration for that closed on the Holy Name of Mary in September. So we had 180 women already signed up for the mom's retreat. And then we began a waiting list. So that went almost towards 100. So we had about 260, 70, 80 women interested in this retreat. We can only take 180. But that was this past weekend. So that was full as well. And some women from around here came. Mm-hmm. And so now they're spreading the word. So, you know, it's like that little concentric circle that just keeps yeah. growing and growing. As,
of course.
And that's the way the church has always been. From Christ and the few little apostles to the greater
yeah.
disciples to the greater, you know, that's just so healthy and it's so beautiful. And I said, today, in so many places you go, it almost is has to be the kind of the church of the catacombs because mm-hmm. there is so much suffering, but these people have to band together, but then they do have to emerge and just go for it. And I think that must be the way that God wants us to
exactly.
be in today's world, to be fearless and preaching the truth with that smile and that joy and that freedom. And also, if someone is listening to this and they want to know how to find out more, I'm going to give our website information too. So it's www.sistersofmary.org, and that's SISTERSOFMARY.org. So simply
give that one more time.
Okay, sistersofmary.org, and nothing's capital, and it's SISTERSOFMARY.org. And we also have a Facebook if people want to get on there and like us, and that's Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, and that has like 23,000, you know, whatevers. People are starving for God.
Yes, they are.
You know, and isn't that beautiful? He put that starvation inside us, and it's meant to be fed.
And you know,
it's so
and the
fun.
the more we try and stifle God out of our schools and on our in our society, the more people thirst for it.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
It
really is. It's really an understanding that you cannot take God out of anything.
Exactly.
Yeah. And people are thirsting for that.
Yeah.
But I do want to go back to you're having this. Discerning God's Will tonight, the talk at St. Isidore.
Yes, yes.
And that's going to be from 6:30 to 8:30.
Yes.
Now, is that open for all high school teens?
Oh, it's open for everybody, as far as I know.
Yes.
Yeah. The more, the merrier,
yes,
M-A-R-Y-I-E-R.
So I'm encouraging my audience that are listening today that there is going to be these beautiful sisters are going to be here speaking tonight at St. Isidore's from 6:30 to 8:30 over on Diamond Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if there's anything that we need to be open to, it's really listening to discerning God's will. And I think that these two young ladies here can really help you in that understanding and that journey.
Uh-huh.
So now tomorrow you have another busy day, it seems. You're going to be at West Catholic High School.
We are.
Will you have the same thing, discerning, at that hour?
I'm sure we will. And just talking about religious life today so that they can, you know, be open, the guys and the girls, you know.
Yes.
Christian religious
yes.
life. Uh-huh.
And
mm-hmm.
Sister Mary, will you be speaking there also?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Definitely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's when you're directing your talk, you're probably speaking to both men and women, correct?
Yes.
I mean, you're not
yes.
really trying
Always.
To discern just to have the women. How do the men react?
Sometimes they're actually even more receptive than the women. It's really kind of hilarious how that works out. I'll go all over the country and I'll speak to different high schools, and sometimes I can get the guys more excited about a possible vocation to the priesthood or to become a good and holy husband and father. And the girls, it's amazing. If you can get the guys to get excited about it,
yes,
the girls are going to follow along. I like to get to know the football players and things because they will get kind of the whole spirit of the school into who you are and what you are about. Yeah. And they are, they're receptive. They see that you're young. They see that you can crack a joke. They it's amazing to get that exposure for them that then will open them up to possibly looking into that for themselves. Or maybe they have also, I'll say, now, do you have a sister who might be discerning a religious vocation? Could you send her our way? Here's our retreat card. Here's whatever. Because it's just, everybody wants to know God, and we help to hopefully bring them closer to Him just by that exposure.
Yes. You know, and it's important, too, because there are certain students in a school that have a little more authority than the other
ones. Oh, definitely.
Because the students looked up to them. Mm-hmm. And it's those that can be very instrumental.
Absolutely.
In asking the questions and seeking God's life, because then people see that it's not all just about popularity. It's about living for the Lord.
Exactly.
And what a beautiful thing that is. And, Sister, you'll be speaking there also.
Oh, yes, definitely. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And you know what? We've always found, too, when we speak about religious life, if it's a mixed audience, you know, that the guys are just as spurred on as the girls are. And so also, you know, I will talk more in the vein, probably, of the girls because of our religious consecration, but you guys. And so I hit them very, very strongly where they're at. So we have a lot of men that are in seminary because we, you know, we further that. And again, I think a guy is very open to a spiritual mom's advice.
Yes.
You know, there's something about a son and a mom's relationship, so to speak.
Yes.
And so I think that's a beautiful thing that our community does, too, because we say without the priesthood, we have no Eucharist. So
that's right.
We
yeah.
have no spouse
that's
given
right.
to us.
That's so true.
You know, and so we've got to go for the priesthood and the diaconate, all the vocations that the church offers, and then say, but one is already yours. You find out that one because you want to be happy.
That's
and you
so
want
true.
To make the effect in life that God asking of you.
You know, and I can see when you're talking to youth, too, you've always got to break that peer pressure.
Uh-huh.
And you, once you get past that and they're open and can really freely talk in the spirit, then you start to make headway.
Exactly.
Where there's
exactly.
no longer that stigma, there's no longer that fear of people going to laugh at me, and you begin to really make headway into understanding what it means to have vocation.
Yeah.
And when I was growing up, the first thing vocation was either priest or nun, or, you know, never think about marriage, single life, all these are vocations.
Yeah, all these, definitely.
Absolutely.
But you know, John Bosco always says, use that peer pressure for the good. And so I'm always like, okay, anybody that's not open to this, I'm sorry, you're just out. You've just got to jump into, you know, where everybody else is. And they jump pretty rapidly because they want to be, as you said, in. And they're like, wow, well, sister's cool. And so we're going to become her friend. And then you just lead them to God.
Yes,
you know,
they
are moldable, very moldable.
And they and thank you for being there because they need to see this vibrancy in our church.
Yes.
I think we lacked that for a while, the vibrancy. And it's always been there, but it wasn't going around to our schools.
Yes.
Like it is now.
Uh-huh.
And that vibrancy brings them to the understanding that I can live this life.
Yes.
And I can live it in joy.
Yes.
Yeah,
and, you know, my
absolutely.
Prayer is that the St. Isidore's, the group tonight, will be very responsive to you.
And I want to say with this Southern accent, if I'm going to brave these colds and this ice over here in Michigan, that's not a good excuse to stay at home.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Everybody can get there because there's bigger fish to fry, as we say in the South.
We're Michiganders. We're used to this stuff.
Okay.
Get out your four-wheel drive. Absolutely.
So we'll just have an overflowing crowd tonight, and that way God will just descend with the Holy Spirit, and everybody will
Amen.
Be so much better for
Amen.
It.
Yeah, you know,
so.
When you speak of that, it is only through the grace of God and the Holy
yes.
Spirit
yes.
that we really have these conversations,
absolutely.
And we really have these vocations.
Yes.
Because people are listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are listening and responding
mm-hmm.
to the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that's how our church grows.
Uh-huh.
And
mm-hmm.
and we know
and
that
it's so much fun.
Of course. You know, and it's been my pleasure to have you here because I know the audience can hear in your voice the joy that you're
God
bringing to the studio.
You, Deacon,
here.
You're wonderful. Well, you pull it out in people too. I mean, you're just a radiant sign of Christ's presence.
Well, thank
really.
You. But you know, it really is, you know, once the Lord got hold of me, there was no turning back.
No going back.
Yeah.
You become like Peter, you say, where else would I go?
Exactly. Yeah. There is nothing else.
No, and it's probably been the most joyous time in my life.
And you know, one thing too, we really want to say is God bless the lay people who have kept these Catholic schools going when
yes.
the sisters were on the wane.
Yes.
And visiting these schools in this area, they are exceptional in every way. We were like, oh my gosh, we can't wait to tell our sisters how wonderful these Catholic schools are.
And think about this. These teachers have sacrificed the difference in their salaries from being in a Catholic environment into a parochial environment, but it was never about the money.
That's right.
It's always about the love of the children.
And
the
you
love
can
of the
tell
Lord.
When you meet them.
It's about the souls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's wonderful. So
beautiful.
I just want to keep encouraging you to just keep on what you're doing because we need you desperately in our church.
Well, you pray for us, and we'll be praying for you very especially, and this whole diocese very especially, because you're in our hearts very deeply now.
Yes, and you will have our prayers. Sister Joseph Andrew and Sister Mary Lawrence, it's been a pleasure having you here.
God
thank
love you.
We will continue to pray for your mission and your journey and your vocation.
God bless
thank you.
So thank
much,
you.
Dear.
Thank you. And I want to thank all of our listeners for joining us today on Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndahl saying, God bless.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Living the Catholic Life with your host, Deacon Jim Thorndahl, on Holy Family Radio. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening.